we can be good people. We can do correct things. We can strive for success without sometimes having to have a pitfall. But sometimes that emotional or that spiritual shaking that we get can be, you know, can serve for such a better good for us. But is it completely necessary? I don't think so.
Uncharted Performance is built by strength. Head over to strength.com and use the discount code Uncharted for 10% off at checkout on all their premium supplement products to fuel your training and enhance your performance without any extra fillers, artificial sweeteners, or banned substances. Including Catalyst, they're NSF certified, chemical-free, hormone-free, grass-fed whey. Fun fact of the day, since the FDA doesn't require dietary supplements to be tested before they are marketed, many supplements don't actually contain what they're supposed to contain. The NSF certification is the highest standard and ensures that supplements do not contain undeclared ingredients or contaminants. To earn NSF certification, products must undergo rigorous testing and inspection. Simply put, strength.com is a brand that you can trust. We certainly do. So get over to strength.com and use the code Uncharted for 10% off at checkout. Do you own a gym? Are you creating your own epic garage gym? You need top-of-the-line strength conditioning training equipment, including barbells, plates, kettlebells, sandbags, squat racks, rigs, strongman implements, powerlifting belts, all the accessories your heart desires, you name it. Jump to unchartedperformance.com, click the Rogue Fitness icon in the sidebar, and let your imagination run wild as you create the perfect training environment. Did somebody say free stuff? I think somebody said free stuff. Did they say free stuff? Yeah, they said free stuff. We have a bad habit of giving away free stuff here on Charter Performance. Be it apparel from Wad Nation, our good friends at Wad Nation, or barbells from Rogue Fitness. There's a giveaway or contest right around the corner. If you want to stay informed for your chance to win, or get notified when a fresh new episode of our video podcast drops before everybody else, sign up for our newsletter on unchartedperformance.com. We promise we won't tell anyone as long as you don't. All right? That'll be our secret. So keep quiet. Shh. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new episode of Uncharted Performance. I am your host, Paul Wenzel, and our mission is to discover, explore, learn, and share knowledge from the best and the brightest in the fields of functional fitness, strength, nutrition, and wellness that you can apply inside and outside of the gym to elevate your performance. In this episode, we continue our visit to Hilliard, Ohio with 6-time CrossFit Games competitor and former champion Graham Holmberg. Personally, this is a very surreal experience for me. When I first started listening to podcasts way, way back before I would even imagine that we would have Uncharted, I heard Graham on the Lewis House podcast, The School of Greatness. Hearing him then and having this opportunity now, a few years later, to speak with him directly, share his story, message, and passages, and passion is pretty unreal. We dig deep into his history with substance abuse, his catalyst for change, as well as his deep connection to God and Graham's faith, and of course, a little CrossFit. So it was an incredible conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I stumbled a few times during the interview, but honestly, I'm very, very thankful to Graham for taking the time during the busy CrossFit game season to sit down and talk to us. Make sure to tag us on Instagram or Twitter whenever or wherever you are catching the show for a shot to win your copy of the Squat Bible. With that said, let's hit it.
We're on.
All right, Paul Wenzel. Oh, that kind of blew it out. Let me do it again. Paul Wenzel back with Uncharted Performance. We're here with Graham Holmberg, back. We didn't really leave.
Yeah.
CrossFit Hilliard, 11th Element. Before we get to Graham, just again, thank you everyone who subscribed to us on iTunes and YouTube and the awesome feedback that we've been getting. It really keeps us motivated, keeps us going. So please don't stop. A good comment never hurts. But also anytime we mess up, if
Eli Graham, but I'm totally messing up this interview. Please leave us feedback and how we can get better, because if you don't, we can't get better.
Yeah.
Graham, for those that have paid attention to CrossFit or in the CrossFit world, know you fairly well, but for some of our listeners, viewers that might not be familiar with you, you are a 6-time CrossFit Games competitor.
Correct.
Former champ, yep. 2010.
Yep.
You have a very athletic background, a football standout, baseball standout back in college and high school as well. Mm-hmm. Before you turned to CrossFit, you are Savannah's husband.
Correct.
As we kind of tried to point that out in the previous episode, the father of three, and you are the owner here as well as coach.
Correct.
Okay. Before we get into matters of CrossFit and training, let's talk about a little bit about family. You do have three kids, mm-hmm. but you also have three older sisters.
Yeah.
So everything happens in threes. That also were very athletic from what I understand.
Yeah.
Who is the best athlete in the family?
I'm gonna give it to me.
Growing up or right now?
I'm just kidding. That's my three older sisters. The oldest was her probably bread and butter was she was a phenomenal basketball player. Mm-hmm. Really good shot. She was a 3-point shooter. She went on and played. I think she probably wanted to go to a little bit bigger school, but the way things end up going out, she ended up playing at it's OSU Newark.
Okay.
So a branch school of the Ohio State University, and she stayed there at home and played. And the group of girls she had there at OSU Newark, they were phenomenal. They won their league. She and a few other girls like set records for, just 4 years of competitive playing. So I remember going and watching her play a lot, and she was definitely, maybe she doesn't even realize it, but an inspiration to watch her push at a college level. And even though OSU Newark's a smaller tiered, just you could see some competitive athletes, mm-hmm. and just, I mean, it took a ton of work ethic for them to do what they did. And I used to, because I was about that age, I was probably middle school, that I would travel a lot with them, because it was like I wasn't old enough to be left home by myself yet. Mm-hmm. So I'd go and watch these weekend tournaments and stuff with her, and my dad would help coach. My second oldest sister, Haley, she was her kind of go-to. I mean, she played all sports. She mm-hmm. was very athletic, very, I think, just a gifted, hardworking person. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I remember my dad always saying, I wish you had Haley's work ethic, because she just worked hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was smart and had talent, but she just worked hard. And she ran cross country in high school, but played basketball, volleyball. I think she kind of gave up volleyball. I can't remember if she maybe stopped that sophomore, junior year. But again, also a very good shot, very good 3-point shooter. Just a smart basketball player. Not really super fast, or not like she was a bad ball handler, but just played smart, just made good decisions. So she was a good basketball player. And then my youngest of my three older sisters, Lindsay, she was probably kind of the rebel. Her and I were closest in age, and she probably, she was one of those people that same thing, had a lot of talent, and I've kind of put her in the same category as me. Got really interested in partying, hanging out with the friends, got mm-hmm. more kind of intrigued to that. But she was a very good runner, though she hated running. She was a good track runner, good cross country runner. Good basketball player. I think volleyball was probably one of her best sports. So, for them, I think they found one or two sports that they excelled at and kind of more specialized in that solely during high school. Whereas for me, I still played all three and did pretty well in all three. So when I said, I'll take the reins and say I was the best athlete, I just think that I found, and my family and my dad supported me in that too, that Graham, I think, if you can play all three sports and excel in all three, okay. then let's keep doing that. Curious what it would have happened had I just only went one direction and one only. And so that's kind of what ended up feeding me into my college decision to go to a smaller school so I could play two sports still. I just wasn't ready to give up one or the other. But I think if I probably solely focused on football, I had a lot of my good friends and even just coaches and stuff around me said, Graham, you probably would have been the best if you just played defense. Mm-hmm. Like I was a really good safety. And that was probably your best position, even though I was a quarterback and then switched to receiver. Okay. I think I just liked having the ball in my hands and being able to make plays yeah. that way versus on defense, you know, you got to make tackles and I don't think is in a highlighted position. So for me, I always like to be in that highlighted type of role. So I ended up playing quarterback only in college and then switched to receiver. But yeah, I think having those, my three older sisters to know that, you know, we were all very athletic mm-hmm. and my dad coached us and just always kind of pruned us, I think, to push hard and be competitive and to try to bring up the people around you. And in his coaching style, we did a lot of conditioning and a lot of let's work our tails off. I mm-hmm. want to be, if we're not the most talented team on the court or the field, we're going to be the best shape.
Okay. Gotcha.
And, I think he had a way of doing that too, that, you'd kind of get rid of some of the people that didn't want to be there. Cause sometimes in younger sports, some kids are just, maybe their parents are driving them to play yeah. or, you know, they're just doing it to try to be cool mm-hmm. because their friends are doing it. But even as long as I can remember back, like Little League, I think people didn't like us because we were just so competitive. And it was like, man, these kids are like fourth graders, third graders. They're like 10 years old. This guy is, you know, making them run wind sprints after yeah. the game. But it just instilled a hard work ethic in us and just to always keep getting better and that to never kind of rest on what you've got. Keep getting better, keep getting better. So I think that was kind of the way we were raised, I guess.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And not rolling with that, hey, I'm the best one.
Yeah. No. They'd probably be like, I'd be upset that I'd say that. Yeah. They're all very talented.
So I guess there's no really good segue into I guess where we're going to go with this. So I apologize for that. But I just want to point out that you are not the best athlete in your fam.
Appreciate that.
But and something I mentioned off the record is one of the first podcasts I listened to was you and Lewis House.
Yeah.
I think 4 or 5 years back. And if you've been following Uncharted Performance, you probably heard of me talk about this ad nauseum. But I've in my mid to late 20s, I've dealt with, abuse, alcohol abuse, substance abuse and whatnot. And I didn't clearly have a path or kind of mission in life until I found someone that gave me that. And listening to you on that podcast also helped me kind of, clear my head in a way. If for those that didn't hear that podcast, and for our listeners, our viewers, could you talk about, would you mind sharing your experience in college and what your partying approach and mm-hmm. essentially what turned it around for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess in the time you look back and it's one of those things that a lot of the guys you hung out with, it was peer pressure in essence. You don't, being a guy that I felt like was a pretty popular student or, you know, played sports and in your own mind at that time, you're like, oh, I'm a cool kid or I'm hanging out with the cool guys. And it's just funny to think that you actually had more peer pressure around you than you realized. And that you're even succumbing to it more than you realize. That I got into chewing tobacco dip in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I couldn't even buy it. You're not even 18, but you could. I remember having friends that would work at gas stations and they'd steal it, and you're like, whatever. It didn't even cross your mind that you're just stealing something and that you're taking it. And then. You know, having older siblings or even older guys in high school baseball team that were seniors or were 18 and they could buy, you know, a can of dip for you. And I just, at the time it was just like, oh, it's just something I'm doing during some sports and it's not something I'm going to do the rest of my life. And before you know it, you're like, man, I'm in college now and I've been doing this for a couple years off and on. It's not like it's been, to the point where I'm doing it in school or anything. It was like, you know, I maybe do it a pinch of dip or something in the evening. And I remember my mom would find cans, empty cans that I thought I was hiding well or, you know, thought I forgot about or something. And a lot of times it'd be like, oh, that's my friends or, oh, you know, I had a little bit of it and it's not any big deal. And, you know, I guess at the time, like I said, in my mind, wasn't a big deal. It wasn't anything that I felt was holding me back. But it's it just continued, you know. And for me, once I got into college, it was, you know, mainly just drinking. And again, you're in college and it's like everybody's kind of drinking. And it's like Tuesday nights, a party night at certain bar, or before you know it, a Thursday night also happens. Probably the one thing that I never particularly ever did was drink before a night before a game. You know, if I had a football game on a Saturday morning, I was definitely not out drinking on a Friday night. But it would turn into definitely Saturday night. And again, half the football team or a majority of the football team would be partying anyway. So you're just like, this is just what we do. We're going to go sweat it out tomorrow. We knew we were going to do conditioning the next morning. And I think the coaches probably knew majority of the guys were, because you get a few guys puking because they drank a little too hard the night before. But again, when you're in a position where you're, you know, you think you're somewhat safe, you're young, you're invincible, your team is successful and you're winning and you're playing and you're contributing, you don't particularly look at those things as setbacks or something that's interfering with your ability to succeed. So for me, again, it wasn't anything that I felt like I put on a pedestal, but you know, definitely I was one of those guys that if I was at a party, I was partying hard and you know, looking back, probably making a fool of myself doing stuff I was doing and just not really anything that I would say, man, I'm such a positive influence on people and I'm a role model for people and this is something I'm proud of. Just a young, ignorant, stupid kid, 18, 19. That led into me getting a DUI when I was 19. Obviously, I'm underage, shouldn't even been drinking anyways. And, you know, driving a loud car with, you know, extra exhaust tips on it and getting pulled over and getting a DUI. Now I learned my lesson, but I didn't stop drinking, but I definitely was smart to not get behind a wheel ever again. And fortunately at that time I was only on campus. I was over the limit, but I wasn't intoxicated. That whole buzz driving is drunk driving. And like I said, nobody was injured. Nobody was hurt from that circumstance. So that's a huge blessing. And there was too many countless times that I can think about back when I was in high school that we didn't even think twice about it. Just get you'd be hammered drunk and just drive. And it's just, what were we thinking? Seriously, what were we thinking? It's just, so blessed that we're not, that I'm here this day. But yeah, so then, you know, in college, a couple of the guys that you hang out with here and there, stuff gets, you know, all of a sudden, late nights partying, smoking a lot of pot late at night. We want to be up all night playing video games. We want to be, I got a big exam I got to crunch for this week. And I don't even know where half the time we're getting this stuff and you're getting, Ritalin or Adderall and you're smashing it up and you're snorting it and you're getting, you know, this extra buzz off and this kick of energy. And it's just like, you know, here we are mixing pharmaceutical drugs with smoking weed, with getting drunk every other, you know, couple nights, and just being just careless with what we were doing, and just careless with our body. And then just to expect to be able to perform in the classroom and then to expect to be able to perform on the athletic field. And again, somewhat of the smoke screen that can go up with that is you're still successful on the field. Yeah. So you're like, this isn't really holding me back.
It's not hurting you in any way.
Yeah. So why should I stop? Or why should this be something that I'm even weighing on or considering? And I mean, it's just, like I said, just a whirlwind of partying. And I mean, like I said, just, you can keep adding other drugs and stuff into the mix of it all throughout college. But, you know, kind of what I listed was kind of the staple of what we did. And like I said, we weren't hurting anybody. And
do you think there would have been an end in sight unless something happened? Or do you think it was just, you know, let's say I'm graduating college, nothing happens. Do you think you would have continued that kind of lifestyle outside of school?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, to a certain degree, I think, yeah. I mean, I think you're going to see some of that continually bleed over. I mean, shoot, to this day, we still have people smoke cigarettes, you know, and they're 30 years old or 40 years old or 50 years old. And I'm sure at some point they were 17, 18, 19 and said, I'm not going to smoke these the rest of my life. Or I'm not going to do this the rest of my life. And for me, the one thing that was a staple was chewing tobacco. That was always part of, you know, I was always dipping, and it became definitely something that I thought, I was like, I can stop this if I want to stop it. And it just continued turning over. Obviously, I didn't see myself being a turning into an alcoholic or anything. But then, you know, other things like I said, smoking weed became easy to do.
The norm, kind of.
Yeah, it became normal. It didn't really, I could go to class high if I wanted to. I could go to the store high. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Like, I didn't feel like it put me in the same type of state of if I was drunk. So again, just adding these different elements into it, how much do I think that was going to consider and can keep rolling through my life? I didn't know.
Okay.
And I don't think I had a goal or a plan or what I wanted to do. I mean, I just was kind of living by the moment and saying, all right, when I finish up school, I'll just figure out what I'm going to do later. And that was really the mentality that I had through college. And it's just sad to look back now that I didn't really have a full on direction. I literally chose the easiest major I could because I was like, I'm going to play two sports and I'll figure out my career later. And I got done with school and I'm like, I'm not going to be an art teacher. Like I said, I literally picked the easiest major. I had some skill and talent with art. It always came easy to me. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be a coach. I always liked sports, so I'll be around. Maybe a teacher and a coach makes sense. But as far as the direction that I really wanted to pursue, I didn't really know yet. And I didn't think that was going to be what it was. But like I said, I'll cross that bridge later. I just didn't have goals. The moment that decision changed for me, and having some perspective of what I wanted to really do and just put more value on my life, was when I lost my cousin. He was in a car accident. He was 17. I was 22. So we're a few years apart. His mother, my mother, are sisters. So we just grew up holidays and stuff, always around each other, and seeing him getting ready to go into a senior high school. And it's just, he had a misfortunate car accident. Wasn't drunk. There was no foul play or anything. Lost control on a rainy, slippery part of the road. Four or five other cars lost control in the same spot. So it was a real random accident. And again, that was for me kind of an earthquake of emotions and just, what am I doing? A wake up call. And I have his initials tattooed on my side. So anybody that's ever seen, you know, that tattoo on my side, and they would never know what it is or whatever. It's his initials with a "To Die Young." And it's just a reminder that, you know, he didn't have that opportunity to really get to fully succeed in his life. But in essence, I wanted to kind of live for him and start taking into what I was doing more seriously and make each day worth its while and try to be more than just what I was doing. It was a dead end road I was on.
So what did you turn to after that? What direction did you head into?
Yeah. So for me, I think it was first and foremost, I remember breaking down and just crying, and I was just on my knees praying, and I just didn't want the life that I had anymore. I was just praying to God, just, I want something different. I want to change. And I grew up with the understanding of giving your life to Christ, accepting Jesus into my heart, being and developing a relationship with God and Christ. And just, I understood all that, but there was never a full application of it. Okay. There was never a full dive into it and really let's see what God can really do for me. Because I always had God on the back burner. It was like I knew what to say when it came to like, oh, do you know God? And I remember having conversations with my roommates and, you know, we'd have conversations on the bus. And I remember people saying like, oh, you believe in God, but you're partying and you're getting after it and you're, you know, trying to date girls left and right. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. You know, it doesn't. It, like I said, on one hand, I could say what I wanted to, but I wasn't demonstrating that in any way or shape or form in my life. So for me, it was immediately just getting into reading and praying and getting, like I said, just getting centered and just getting humbled, because it was like, I've tried it on my own. I've tried to satisfy myself and be happy in what I trying to please myself. And it just got me nowhere.
Okay.
And it got me, like I said, just more and more spiraling the wrong direction.
For a lot of individuals that are not in a good spot, be it, you know, alcohol, relationships, career, there seems to be a catalyst. There seems to be one that was for you. There was one in my life as well. Is there anything that we that based on your experience, kind of looking back and having that perspective to the listeners and viewers, is there any, to can we avoid the catalyst for change? Or is it necessary to drive that change? Is there any way that, hey, before you get there, you know, you should maybe start doing some things differently now?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. There was a quote that I found at one point, and I remember struggling to understand the quote, and I remember asking my dad about it. And I don't remember if it was a quote or a Bible verse, but this is years ago. This is right around that time I was really big into quotes and just loved reading quotes and trying to write up my own cool inspirational ones. And again, a lot into just Bible verses and using and correlating those together and just looking at how Proverbs is giving me inspiration and instruction. But the quote along the lines is something about it's not necessary for evil to actually happen in order for good to occur or for correction. And I was kind of confused about the verse or the quote. And I remember talking with my dad about it, and he's like, I mean, use my sister for example. She did what was right because she knew if she works hard, she's going to get good grades. If she works hard, she's going to be better. It didn't take a mess up. It didn't take her failing in school for that to catalyst her to do well. Mm-hmm. Like, we can be good people. We can do correct things. We can strive for success without sometimes having to have a pitfall. But sometimes that emotional or that spiritual shaking that we get can be, you know, can serve for such a better good for us. But is it completely necessary? I don't think so. But that being said, if I still correlate that to bringing that into kind of righteousness and bringing God into the picture, we all fall short before God's glory, and we all have missed the target at some point. And so therefore, we'll never be able to be 100% accurate and 100% righteous. We're either deeming ourselves righteous, or we're viewed righteous by God's terms or by God's appointing for us. And so, to me, again, that's why I share the gospel with people and I share the word with people, because to me, you either at the end of the day are going to say, I decided and I chose to be here and exist and create my own self in this world that I'm in, or I won the luck of the lottery and God chose me and God gave me here and gave me a chance to exist in this world. Because you didn't wake up one day and just say, I want to exist and be a human being. Same thing with me. I didn't get to choose to be a human being or exist in this body and be born by my parents and have this. I mean, God's chose our plan for us and our path for us. And the more that we can dive into that plan and find that direction for us, the more success and I think the more happiness that we're going to actually find.
And this, I think, thank you for sharing that. I think it's a great segue in terms of taking that direction. And we're sitting at your gym now, which you call CrossFit Hilliard 11th Element.
Yeah.
What is the 11th Element?
All right. So I made my coaches have to practice all the time. And I always randomly will quiz Savannah on it. So a lot of times at CrossFit Level 1 seminars, they talk about the 10 elements of fitness. And when we were trying to figure out a name for this gym, I mean, there's so many affiliates out there now and just cool different gym names and fitness gyms. So it was tough trying to come up with something new. I mean, you could come up with something really random and silly and probably get it, but you wanted to have a purpose. And so I was like, well, you know, if we're going to incorporate faith and we're going to incorporate talking and sharing the gospel with people, how can we intertwine that into a name? And I was like, well, you know, an element that we train in here is faith. We're trying to physically or spiritually guide people and spiritually develop people. But the other 10 elements that we train in here are strength, power, speed, stamina, endurance, accuracy, agility, balance, coordination, and flexibility. Those are those 10 that, like, most of the time when people are like, can you name the 10 elements? Or like, strength, flexibility, it's like naming the 10 commandments. People are like, I can't commit adultery, can't steal, can't kill. And then you kind of start running out of ideas. Exodus 20, by the way, is your spot to go find your 10 commandments. But it's one of those things where it's like people know them, but then they kind of forget about them. So we train those 10 elements all the time. But that 11th element, we do train all the time, and that's faith. I always tell people the first day, time you walk through the door, you might have read about me, you might have read about the gym, but that's a leap of faith to walk in here, say, I'm going to forfeit my fitness regimen that I thought I was doing. I'm going to put it in your hands. I'm going to have you coach me. I'm going to follow your programming. I'm going to follow your coaches, and I'm going to trust my body and my health with you guys. That's a huge step of faith. So I always tell people, you have a tremendous amount of faith right off the bat. And then, you know, now we take that and say, you know, every time that you step up to a heavy lift or a hard workout, there's an uncertainty that you're facing. You could get injured. You could get this might be the last time you ever attempt this big lift, or so it's, you're always displaying faith in here. And so I thought it was silly to not talk about it or not make it something that's, you know, part of our name for our gym.
So it might not necessarily be, faith in a religious sense, but just a faith, like you mentioned, and people given their belief in you and your coaches that, hey, you can make me a better person.
Sure.
You can make me a better athlete.
Yeah.
You can make me a better human. So it's not just, it can be religion.
Yeah.
It can be God, but it can also just be faith.
Yeah. So for us, that was the original intent.
Okay.
That's the purpose, is that we're going to share our faith, because my life has been extremely guided by diving into God's word and basically trying to fulfill what I feel like my purpose is through God and give that glory back to Him and what I do and what I find passion for. And so for me, I thought I'd be doing a disservice if I wasn't able to return that and share that with people and give that. Now, that's my testimony. It, you know, other people's experience has to be for themselves. But yeah, I mean, for me, that was the staple of the name. But for sure, like, it can definitely be a different elements of displaying faith. It doesn't necessarily have to be only faith in God. It could be, you know, faith in, you know, trusting the process of what we're doing.
Understood.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a good place to stop, actually.
Okay.
I want to thank you again, because you know, it's for some people, it might not be easy sharing to what, you know, what they've been through and how they've gotten to where they're at.
Yeah.
And what gave them that direction. So again, thank you again. And we're going to get into some CrossFit in the second half.
Okay, great. I don't know.
Every good is a good sign.
There
Every
you side go.
Is a good sign.
I like that.
All right, we are back with Graham Holmberg at CrossFit Hilliard, 11th Element. Let's get into CrossFit, because we are in a CrossFit gym.
Okay.
It wouldn't be a podcast with a CrossFit Games Champs without talking CrossFit.
Sure.
Why do you think you became good at CrossFit?
I think, for me personally, just my entire upbringing of just being an athlete and playing sports and the conditioning components and years of running sprints and years of working out and the years of weightlifting and just pushing for that next rep and being competitive and just building that team chemistry and just that camaraderie and just having pressure on yourself, being a pitcher who's, you know, the bottom of the ninth and you got to get three outs, or you're at the plate, bases are loaded, and you a base hit, you win the game. All those different pressures that I think built into me growing up are things that I was able to apply when I first got into CrossFit.
How have you stayed good?
That's
because things have changed.
Things have changed a lot.
And there's like a handful of both male and female athletes that have been able to stay at that high level for as long as you have.
Yeah. Well, maybe even just, you know, thinking too, like, some of being, I think, successful in CrossFit has some genetic makeup. So if you look at, you know, what is there, five male champs that have happened off the top of my head, I'm trying to think if that's the right number or not. So you had OPT, James Fitzgerald, so most people don't even know. That was 2007.
The OG.
And he's like 5'10", 175 pounds.
Yeah.
Then you have 2008, Jason Kalipa. He's 5'9", 205 pounds, 210 pounds. So a little bit shorter, a little bit heavier though, right? So then we had Mikko Salo, 5'9", 185, 190 pounds. And then I won in 2010, 5'11", 185 pounds. So right now, everything's right around that 6 foot mark, and nothing lighter than about 175, 180, nothing heavier than about 210. And then Rich Froning, 5'9", 195, 200 pounds. Over and over again. You know, obviously he kind of maybe fluctuated a few pounds here and there, but for the most part, right there, right around 200 pounds to 190. Ben Smith, 5'11", 5'10 and a half, whatever, somewhere right around there, 190 pounds. And then Matt Frazier, 5'7", 5'8", 190 pounds. So we're seeing that somewhere right around that 6 foot mark. You know, if anybody's been watching CrossFit for a while, we see that we're not seeing 6'5", 240-pound guys winning CrossFit games.
Unfortunately for me, that
we're not seeing 5'5", 155-pound guys win the CrossFit games. I think a lot of people wanted to see Chris Spieler win it at some point. And maybe he can in the Masters category if that's what he's going to compete this year. But yeah, it's just, it's a sport that demands that ability to have good conditioning, good body weight, and good weightlifting capacity. And somewhere right around that 6 foot mark is the successful kind of height. And somewhere around the 180 to 210 pounds is that window of weight that seems to be optimal. So just like if you want to be an NFL lineman, 6 foot five to, you know, maybe 6'2 to 6'5, 300 pounds is the sweet spot number. And if you want to be an NBA basketball player, probably over 6 foot and probably 30 plus. So there's some like genetic potential.
Predisposition, yeah.
Yeah, that it's already going to give you an opportunity to be successful. So I think that, that helps for me being in that size. And in a weird way, I'm kind of one of the taller guys in the sport and I'm not even 6 foot. And I don't ever think of myself as tall, but when you see me next to a bunch of guys, I'm like, man, I look like a giant out there. I have people be like, dude, I thought you were like 6'4", 230 when I saw you on TV and I see you in person, you're like, you're kind of average size. I'm like, well, I appreciate that, but I get it because I've seen myself on TV and I see the CrossFit guys on when you watch on ESPN, we're like, dude, we look huge. We look like monsters out there. TV does add 20 pounds. So yeah, that's kind of a genetic, you know, deep, a genetic default size that works best. But yeah, to stay consistent and stay good, I mean, I think a lot of what you have to pay attention to the sport. Mm-hmm. So the weightlifting demand was something that wasn't really a big thing at first.
Yeah.
It was more of like, could you move some weight? Did you have good condition? Could you do gymnastic stuff? And then I feel like Rich Froning was kind of the first guy that really just has a phenomenal overhead squat, phenomenal mobility, and he really pushed the envelope in the weightlifting area. I think he's like one of those first guys that was like snatching 225, and you're like, dude, he's not even, you know, 230 pounds. It's crazy he's snatching 225. And then clean and jerking 300 pounds, and it was like, okay, I thought that the old number was like 275 clean and jerk and like a 200-pound snatch. And it's like those numbers just kept bumping. So you either learned to swim and kept snatching more weight and kept clean and jerking more weight, or your ability to keep competing just plummeted. I mean, you were done. Like, and CrossFit has, if you look at like a pie chart of like what's been tested the most in the sport, like snatch is significantly higher. I mean, it's tested more regularly than almost any other movement. Not only dumbbell snatching, power snatching, light barbell snatches, kettlebell snatches, barbell snatches. It's prominent in competition. And the reason for it too is because it demands so much kind of precision and timing and mobility and strength and speed. Whereas sometimes you can get big burly guys that can clean and jerk a lot of weight. But snatching, it's like you can't just burly the bar. Like you got to be technically sound to snatch well. So snatch has kind of been that number that you had to keep getting better at. And so for me, I put a lot of time and emphasis on that. And I probably lost and suffered a little bit in the conditioning area and the gymnastics area as well. But I was solid there. But I just knew if I wanted to remain competitive, that I had to be able to keep my OLLI numbers in a competitive range. So that's just been something that's, you know, it's like when we come in here and we're kind of what's in doubt or what we're going to hit for the day, we usually snatch.
Okay.
We squat, we snatch. Like it's just, those are two things. It's like you just never can get too good at those, too good at squatting or too good at snatching weight.
After you won in 2010, what was your goal after winning? What was the goal for next year? The following year.
Well, I mean, looking back, I remember even saying like I wanted to be the first guy to go back to back.
Okay.
Fell short of that a little bit. It took fourth place. Mm-hmm. Was the first champ that went first to fourth. I think Kalipa went first to fifth, and then Miko also went first to fifth. So for me to go first to fourth was like, he's the first champ that's came back and done the best the second year. But yeah, I think, you know, there was obviously a tremendous spark lit for Froning, and, you know, he came back and took the title and then continued that trend. But yeah, I think some of the goals changed as her and I, we got married. Okay. We, you know, running a full-time affiliate and balancing it all. And it wasn't a matter of trying to balance it. I mean, if you ask her, she would say like, Graham puts a lot of time into the gym, mm-hmm. and lots of time into the training. And, you know, it's my job. It's what I'm sponsored by companies to be good at. And, you know, in essence, if you got people paying you to be performing, you're a professional athlete, yeah. in that realm. So as a professional athlete, I need to be dedicated, you know, having a seriously dedicated season to that. Something that I think's been a little bit of a struggle for me is probably the sleep aspect with kids coming into the picture. You know, whether or not I'm the one getting up all the time in the night, my sleep's probably getting interrupted here and there. But it's the best thing ever to interrupt me. hearing your little baby boy cry or your little daughter cry and you need to go rock her in the middle of the night. As frustrating, as challenging that is to pull yourself out of your bed. It's just a moment and something that's just you'll never get back, and you can't explain to people until they experience it themselves. Like I said, it's a love-hate thing, you know. you love your kids, but you're like, oh, I'm dragging in the morning, where's my coffee? So I think to me that's been a little bit of something that's probably gave me a little bit of a hiccup for the last couple of years, and add some challenges. But, you know, still I want to keep improving, and I think that's for me the thing that keeps me hungry and keeps me coming back. Okay. I want to be better than I was the year before. Mm-hmm. And what does that fully look like? It could be just I'm 5 pounds better in a lift. Maybe I've PR'd a 30 muscle ups for time. I've improved on the rower. So to me, I find it hard to improve everywhere every year. But if I can keep chipping away and keep getting better at something each year, I feel like eventually that all is going to lead into something really, really great. For me, obviously, you would love to see that lead into a championship and winning the CrossFit Games again. But the sport has grown. It's magnified now. And the guys that are at the top are phenomenal. And I like to put myself in that category, but I'm also realistic. And I know I'm in a position where I'm running an affiliate. I'm teaching some classes. I'm taking care of some kids here and there. I'm not sleeping perfect every single night. I'm probably not getting the perfect diet in all the time because of trying to run a business and taking care of kids and all those other, you know, interruptions that happen. Not that I'm upset with those. I love having them. But when you look at a guy like a Matt Frazier, who's his sole purpose every single day that he wakes up, from the moment he wakes to the moment he goes to bed, is to win the CrossFit mm-hmm. Games again. Or a Ben Smith. And, you know, some of these guys are married or they have girlfriends or whatever, but the amount of competitive, high-level competitive CrossFitters that have kids and have a full-time job or run an affiliate or coach or do anything other than only do CrossFit is very, very small. You just don't see it.
Yeah.
And there's a little snip from the Fittest on Earth documentary that, I don't know if, I think it was Katrin that said it. She was like, that there is, as to be a CrossFit Games athlete, there, you don't have a balanced life. It's not a balance. You're CrossFit. Rory McKernan said in that as well, like, to be a CrossFit Games athlete is borderline like a mental health issue. Like, you're a little bit insane if you're that dedicated, that crazy ability to train that much to be able to make the CrossFit Games. You probably borderline have a mental health issue.
So crazy. So speaking of being mentally unstable,
yeah.
How do you? Because I see the demands that you place on yourself when you train, and as a CrossFit Games competitor, it's a lot of stress.
Yeah,
and you've been doing it for a very long time. How do you recover, and how do you and have your training standards evolved, and how have they evolved since, you know, first starting in CrossFit to now?
Yeah, I think when I first started CrossFit, I was very, very rarely did just straight up strength work. It was like everything was always in a conditioning base. Mm-hmm. So everything was for time or an AMRAP. And like I said, that progression was like, oh, I need to get stronger. Like I can't just do snatches and squats in a workout like with a 95-pound barbell thruster or 135 back squat just because I have to do sets of 30 in a workout for time. Like I need to slow things down and get underneath heavy bars and slow things down and learn how to really lift the big lifts. And so that I think wear and tear on your body when you start getting underneath heavy back squats and heavy deadlifts and really hitting a strength protocol to get stronger, to stay relative and be competitive, that put a totally different demand on your body, I think, than just kind of doing kind of conditioning style workouts mm-hmm. all the time. Now, the volume and the speed leave you sore and can leave you beat up, but it's a lot of demand on your spine, your hips, your knees, your shoulders when you're clean and jerking 300 pounds over and over again, snatching 250 pounds, 270 pounds, you're deadlifting 500 pounds. That just beats you up, and it leaves you just a different achy sore. Mm-hmm. And so something that she's always encouraged me, I mean, I regularly work with a chiropractor. Throughout the open season this year, I kind of didn't regularly see him because this year I did all the workouts on a Friday and then retested on a Monday. And those were the 2 days that I always would work with him. So now that the open's done, I'll probably get back in working with him once a week. So I get like grass thinning in my shoulders, which is basically breaking down the muscle tissue, kind of the fascia level of the tissue to help break down some blood capillaries, recover the muscle tissue a little bit faster, gets away some kind of sometimes like knots and sticky spots in the shoulder. So I've always had some shoulder issues, and it's tremendously helped me in the last year and a half. My shoulders have been extremely more healthy, but I still have old wear and tear from throwing a football and throwing a baseball my whole life in my right shoulder, which gives me problems. So handstand walks always are issues for me. Overhead squats.
It didn't seem to be earlier today.
I know. We kind of talked, Scott and I were like, we could have probably made that a little tougher, but we've been doing 50-foot handstand walks pretty regularly. So today we're doing 60-foot. I'm like, let's keep stretching it. You know, let's do 60-foot for a while. Let's stretch it out to 75-foot. And then if we can start getting to the point where we can hit 100-foot handstand walks regularly inside workouts, I mean, regionals have tested 100-foot handstand walks pretty regularly. And it always has kind of left my shoulders fatigued, and it's given me trouble for overhead squats or snatching right afterwards. So just something now that I can start implementing for the next 2 months, be ready for regionals, because probably handstand walks will be there. But yeah, I mean, a regular adjustment, somebody who, you know, can make sure that if I'm getting tightness through my quads and in my IT bands, or it's tugging on my knee, to have somebody who's knowledgeable to attack that area and help keep me kind of lined up and keep me getting back out on the floor was always key. So I've worked with a couple different chiropractors in Columbus, but I got a guy that's right around the corner that has been awesome for us. And so I refer a lot of people to him. We also work with some different dry needling people. We just kind of got a dry needling specialist into the gym. Because I think, you know, you got to find kind of what works best for you. So we've seen cupping has been kind of popular lately. But yeah, it's you're going to have to do some extreme type stuff to recover the body and help heal you up. But for me, it's always kind of been, I just feel like it's a, you just got to keep the pedal pushed. And the more that I'm kind of in here doing, I've always kind of been, I like a lot of volume. So I feel like when I just do one workout a day, and even if I could just make that super really, you know, really intense workout a day and just do one session, I find that I feel like I'd be more sore, I'd get more stiff. It's like the more I can, like first thing in the garage, go out and row, run, do a workout in the garage first thing in the morning, 8:30 in the morning. And then get in here and train at 10:30. Teach a class, train again at 1:30, go home and eat, come back and train again at 5:30 and kind of linger around till 7:30 doing more workouts. So it's like, wow, that's a lot of volume in the day. But it's like, I feel like my body just stays better when it's just still just keeps moving and moving and moving. And it's like the more breaks and the more rest I have, the more stiff my body gets and the more it hurts to warm back up and go again. So for me, I just feel like I get, it's like we're like water. We gotta constantly be in motion. So the off season, sometimes when I'm just doing one workout a day, it's like I feel the worst because it's like it's so long before my body's done a squat snatch or a heavy lift or a muscle up. It's like my shoulders are more stiff. So it's like the more I can keep moving, the better my body feels. So I don't know. Maybe it's a wear out versus rust out mentality.
Is there an end in sight for you, man?
Well, she hopes there is. I'm 32. I almost forgot how old I was for a second. Just turned 32.
Happy belated birthday.
Thanks. Yeah, that was what is December. So 32. You know, Masters now says 35. I'm gonna do team next year. Mm. There was even some consideration of doing team this year because we had just had a baby in New Year's Day, January 1. We had our third edition. And it was just like, is this going to be doable? And it's been a lot of challenges for us. There's no denying that. And she said it earlier, we have our highs and we have our lows. But I think as Holt gets a little older, it becomes a little easier. I think there's a lot of trouble with a brand new baby. So I end up missing out on competing at Wodapalooza this year. I didn't go down to a Reebok Summit athletes trip. So there's been, you know, already a few things that I felt like, okay, this isn't the right timing. Last year was, you know, I felt really, really prepared going into the regionals. Came down with food poisoning the weekend of regionals, and it was torture. I mean, I was dehydrated, I was cramping, I couldn't eat anything, couldn't keep anything down, and it was just frustrating to go out on being so prepared. And I really liked the events, and then to just not be able to perform and not be able to be everything you invested into. And so had that worked out well last year, you know, I probably would be doing team this year. But I was just like, you know, I just don't want to go out on that note. I want to go out knowing that if I don't qualify for the games this year, at least I gave it one more effort, and I felt like I was able to perform 100% healthy. I mean, most athletes are a little bit banged up here and there, but for me, I've always had little knee tweaks or hip strains or quad strain. I mean, just random stuff that happens when you're training all the time. But you work through it and you work around it. So, but I'd never been sick in a competition, and that was just a totally different animal trying to deal with that. And there was just nothing I could do. So I just was just upset that I just didn't get to go out the way I wanted to. And so, whatever happens this year happens, and it's my last go at as an individual. So I'm going to go team next. And then, you know, maybe when that Masters opens back up for me at 35, maybe see where I'm at then. I mean, it's a couple years down the road. Storm will be close to 7 years old. Hadley will be, you know, 5. Holtman will be 3 or 4. So, but for me at the same time, like, I want to coach them in sports, and they're going to be more involved, and they're going to be doing different stuff. So, It's hard to see what that's going to look like in a few more years, but I know for at least probably 2 or 3 more years, I want to try to stay pretty competitive, and you know, individual is my last go at it as an individual, and then I've got some things in the works for a good team potentially. I'd love that'd be a lot of fun to go knock the CrossFit Mayhem dynasty off there. Off the podium. It's going to take some tough work. I mean, he's got a tremendous group of girls down there he's training with. And then obviously he himself, and then the guys that are on his squad as well are studs. I mean, Rich knows what he's doing. That's a good, phenomenal facility that they got there. So that squad's not going anywhere for a long time, but, I'd love I've done some team competitions before, and they're a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to that the next year. This upcoming 2 months of this next 2 months of training for regionals is going to be, it's going to be torturous. It's not going to be fun. But I think in my heart, I have one more good effort at it, and let the chips fall where they fall. And if I qualify, then, you know, it'd be fun to be get that first experience up there in Madison, be a new place. and just know that this would be my last go for it. So
it's been a pleasure watch.
Thanks.
To watch you. And
yeah.
If she lets you, keep competing.
Yeah.
Last question to wind down is, so looking back at the last 50, 45 minutes that we spent together, a similar question I asked Savannah, what's the one thing that you want somebody to take away from this interview, this podcast?
The one thing I think that, you know, we kind of shared in the first component that also kind of bleeds over into this, almost in the in-between that we talked about, it was, for me, you know, as much as I'm in essence in the CrossFit world popular, you know, and some people that are new to CrossFit may not know who I am, and that's fine. I'm not losing sleep over that, but it's pretty cool when you go to a venue or a competition and people are like, they want to get a picture with you and they want to talk with you. And it's just like, man, at the end of the day, I'm just another dude. I'm not anybody special, but people are like, no, you've won the CrossFit Games, or you've been out on that floor and you've done it and you've competed over and over again, and you're an OG. You've been on time. That's cool, and that makes what we do in here kind of feel worth it, because you're inspiring and you're developing people, or you know, encouraging people to chase their dreams, and so that's kind of a cool element that makes it worth it. And it's hard for me to when you, again, you have social media and you have the material world of what we can chase and pursue. It's hard to not get excited and want to chase and pursue those things. But for me, I definitely want to try to always kind of get regrounded in what's my big purpose? What's the big vision of it all? And, you know, at the end of the day and at the end of my life, am I going to be, what kind of legacy am I leaving behind? Am I going to be only recognized as some games champ, or am I potentially impacting hundreds upon thousands of people that maybe come through my doors and train in my gym? And what kind of everlasting effect am I going to have on them? So maybe the takeaway for me is that, you know, we all are going to have some different identities and purposes that we're going for. And as big as or small as they may be, that we never stop trying to pursue to be the best in them. And always trying to find and strive a way to not just let that purpose be just for us, but to let our purpose be something that's impacting the people that are around us.
Awesome. So if somebody wants to get more information, and it's kind of funny because social media is a sure. really good way to do that, is where can people find 11 Element?
Well,
and you as well.
Yeah, we've kind of spun off a couple different little brands because we loved the idea and people loved it so much that I wanted to try to make it a little bit bigger. So we first started a brand called Faith and Hustle, and then that kind of changed into Have Faith and Hustle because it was some other brand that was already existing like that. So we changed it. And then we recently just launched kind of my programming. And so that's called Faith Hustle Compete. So there's this faithhustlecompete.com. We have a Faith Hustle Compete Instagram that's kind of linked through my page as well. And so for me, that's a chance for me to share kind of my programming with people, as well as we do a daily, there's a daily verse, or not always a verse, but a faith portion and quote that kind of goes with each day's programming. So that's kind of a way that for us kind of helps get people fired up and get people mentally thinking about different things, and not just coming in and only focusing on the workouts, but just the purpose of your day. So that's kind of what we've been doing now. So I got a website for that as well. So, I mean, kind of our CrossFitHilliard.com website's for people that are interested in joining the gym. Mm-hmm. So anybody in the Columbus area, you know, if they search CrossFitHilliard.com or just Google search CrossFit Hilliard, they'll find us. Or they could obviously just search my name. They'll probably find the gym as well. But if they're looking for, you know, a way to kind of follow the programming and kind of see what we do day in, day out, we have an affiliate programming, and then we have an individual competitor style of programming. And those kind of, again, both have some of the same principles that we provide for our gym, as well as what I do for myself individually. So if anybody's interested in that type of stuff, then we offer that. But if they're ever in the Columbus area and they just want to drop in, we accept drop-ins. Okay. And we're always excited to have new people come in here and experience what we do here.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll link all that up like we always do on the website underneath the interview, and YouTube as well.
All right.
Graham, it was Again, very fortunate to meet you in person. Again, indirectly, you inspired us to do this.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can, you know, as Savannah was kind of joking, if we can share and give direction to someone, that's kind of our mission as well. So
yes.
Appreciate it very awesome. Much, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap on another episode of Uncharted Performance. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment and leave a rating and review on iTunes. Let us know when and where you're listening by tagging us at Uncharted Performance on Instagram and or at Reach Uncharted on Twitter. Each month, we will select the winner to win a special prize. For this month, we're giving away a copy of the Squat Bible from Dr. Aaron Horschig. Take care for now and see you next time. And don't forget to use the code Uncharted for 10% off on strength.com on all their high-quality supplements. Rage on, UP Nation, and Reach the Uncharted.